Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, first of all, I'm Ross Wilson, the CTU President, Carol Beaumont, our Secretary, Sharon Clear, our Vice President Māori, and Peter Conway, our Director of Policy and Economist. And myself and Sharon will make some brief introductory comments. And we will both make clear our opposition to this bill. The first fundamental issue we have with the bill is that it's not genuinely about probationary periods. A genuine probationary period creates a reasonable expectation of continuing employment. This bill strips all workers commencing a new job of all rights in respect of that employment. Whether the employment continues is dependent upon the absolute discretion, prejudice, even the whim of the employer. No reason need be given. That is not probationary employment. Probationary employment is already provided for in Section 67 of the Act, and the CTU has yet to see any evidence, either before this morning or this morning with Mr. Matt, to suggest that employers have any significant problems with that provision or in fact have even used it. The primary reason given for this bill is that the existing law makes it too difficult to dismiss an employee, and much is made of the few anecdotal stories that there are. The facts are, firstly, only 0.1% of employees take an employment problem to the Employment Relations Authority. The number of employees who take a personal grievance in the first 3 months appears to be insignificant, and those who challenge termination of probationary employment under Section 67 appears to be too small to register at all in the data. In 2005, in every three-month period, there were 297,210 instances where somebody started a new job. So this bill would take away the rights of up to 300,000 working New Zealanders in any three-month period in order to address an alleged issue, the alleged difficulty of terminating employment at the end of a probationary period, when evidence has not been produced to support that claim. And it would deny one of the most fundamental rights in English law, the natural justice right to be heard before you're condemned. Workers may be sacked without reason being put to them, or in fact ever being disclosed. I also briefly note the many other reasons, detailed in our submission, why we oppose this bill on behalf of working New Zealanders. Firstly, the bill, if implemented into law, would, in addition to denying a worker any right of redress against arbitrary and unjustified dismissal, deny any remedy for breach of contract by the employer, deny access to mediation, including, in fact, the denial of the right to ring the Department of Labour for information and advice, deny the right to recover arrears of wages, deny access to the procedures under the Employment Relations Act for sexual harassment or discrimination, or any other employment problem as defined in the Act for which mediation and legal processes are otherwise available. Secondly, the bill would encourage a negative workplace culture. Any worker in their first 90 days of employment knows that any suggestion or query they make could result in dismissal. That is exactly the opposite of the sort of workplace culture both Business New Zealand and ourselves agree we have to build for a modern knowledge economy. It is, to say the very least, disappointing that despite all our work together on productivity and skills, business organisations appear to have reverted to old ideology in supporting this bill. A related point is that dismissal without redress could also occur, for example, if a worker is elected as a workplace health and safety representative or a learning representative. They can be sacked without the reason even being given. They certainly have no redress. They can be sacked if they exercise the right to refuse dangerous work. The employer can sack them, and they have no redress. Fourthly, the bill will reduce labour market flexibility. Workers will be reluctant to start a new job if doing so will put them at risk of arbitrary and unjustified dismissal for the first 90 days. Fifthly, the bill would prejudice future employment prospects for employees who are dismissed with no right of appeal to argue the case, but need to declare such a dismissal when they apply for a new job. In many cases, they won't even know why they've been sacked. Sixthly, the bill would disqualify dismissed workers from claiming a benefit, as the automatic stand-down period is usually not waived there's no personal grievance being pursued. Eighth, the bill is an attack on fundamental union rights, which are guaranteed as human rights under international law. Under the bill, again, it would be possible for an employee to be dismissed without any redress for joining a union or even participating in legitimate union activities such as collective bargaining under the Employment Relations Act. Workers are at their most vulnerable when they first start a job. It's rather ironic that this bill removes rights from people when in fact they most need them. The CTU is not suggesting that every employer will take advantage of the law, of the bill should it become law. Many would not want to put new employees in the situation of huge insecurity, which it would allow. But enough employers would use it for it to become a major and negative feature of our labour market. The CTU has long advocated for more investment in people to enhance their jobs in the labour market. That is why we support programs such as the Training Opportunities Program, Jobs Plus, Youth Transition Services, initiatives through the Mayor's Task Force for Jobs, Modern Apprenticeships, the Hui Tamata initiatives and so forth. Sharon Clear will make further comment on this positive investment approach to getting workers into jobs. Mr. Chair, the CTU doesn't consider that this bill has any merit whatsoever and urges this committee to reject it. Thank you.
Tēnā koutou katoa, tēnā koutou ina mana, tēnei te mihi atu ki a koutou. I am here today to articulate to you from Te Rūnanga o ngā kaimahi Māori o Aotearoa, Te Rūnanga, that we're totally opposed to the Employment Relations Probationary Employment Amendment Bill 2005, and I'll raise two issues important to Te Rūnanga. This bill proposes it will create work for Māori, particularly young Māori. This is not about creating jobs for Māori, nor will it give Māori a chance to get secure jobs. And further, it will not solve Māori unemployment or the casualisation of the Māori workforce. This bill dangles a false carrot when it is in fact a stick that takes away rights. I thank you for the opportunity to make this presentation today, and you've called for submissions on this bill, and Te Rūnanga speaks against this bill. With more than 40,000 Māori members who work across skilled, semi-skilled and unskilled work environments, Te Rūnanga is ideally placed to inform you on getting a job and keeping a job realities for Māori, and identify the harm and threats to job security that is on offer through this bill. We are here today to persuade you to reject it. Te Rūnanga absolutely opposes this bill. Te Rūnanga contends that there is a better way to creating jobs and that Māori initiatives are needed that will lead to positive development and decent employment for Māori. Te Rūnanga contends that Māori youth transition to employment must be supported through development and genuine job opportunities. Te Rūnanga considers that it is time for New Zealand to make a stand and through the rejection of this bill acknowledge that Māori have rights to security, integrity and dignity, and that these rights can no longer be violated in the name of progress. Māori workers who have not secured employment after 90 days probation will not qualify for work and income assistance and will face a 13-week stand-down because no personal grievance is being pursued. There is a very real risk that Māori workers will undertake unsafe work practices and conditions in hope of securing permanent work. Māori unemployment in December 1999 stood at 19.3%. Today it is at 8.7%. And at one stage last year, it was at 5.7%. This huge reduction occurred without this bill. Existing initiatives and the current employment law focus on both the protection of workers' and employers' rights. Building a skilled workforce and lifting labour productivity through an investment approach is far better for New Zealand economy than totally insecure employment. You have an opportunity to make a stance today and focus on the rights of the Māori worker to secure employment. Te Rūnanga wants to see more done to invest in Māori to improve their employment opportunities. An investment approach consistent with hui taumata has already shown what needs to be done. More is needed, including for young Māori. The 2004 Department of Labour report identified Māori students leaving school without qualifications remains higher than for other students. Māori are more likely to enrol in diploma or certificate level programs, and 65% of employed Māori work in semi-skilled or elementary occupations. From this, we can conclude that Māori youth who are currently unemployed with no skill transitioning into work, or those youth with some skills, are likely to face greater insecurity and become extremely vulnerable to casualisation and insecure employment. The Māori Students Association have asked me to give you a message from them, which is that they would like you to ensure the continued nurturing of Māori potential and development. This bill threatens their potential. They ask that you are given a clear picture of Māori student needs and aspirations for Māori development through skill investment. So it is time that New Zealand made a stand and acknowledged the rights of Māori workforce. We recommend that the committee reject this bill, and in doing so, the committee will signal that Māori can no longer be dishonoured in the name of progress. Te Rūnanga strongly opposes any suggestion to amending this bill, as amendments will not solve Māori employment, Māori semi-skilled or unskilled participatory rates, or Māori workforce casualisation. What will work better is supporting Māori initiatives to lifelong learning, skill investment and decent job opportunities for our young. Locking Māori into unemployment and poverty through unfair employment laws through a 90-day rotation of the Māori workforce will mean Māori will continue to feature highly in short-term employment. Making a new Māori worker easily disposable is not to their benefit. Therefore, in conclusion, this bill fails to give Māori a fair go. It creates an imbalance in employment power relationships by not offering genuine employment opportunities and removal of employment rights. Te Rūnanga urges this committee to reject this bill. Kia ora.
Thank you, Sharon. Mr. Chair, just before we start questions, Carol's got a brief request to make.
The committee would appreciate receiving your submissions that you've read, if that would be all right.
Yeah, sure.
Yes, if I could just make a request of the Select Committee. We would like to seek, and you may have already done this, but advice from the Human Rights Commission on the proposition that the Human Rights Commission procedures will provide an alternative to the personal grievance provisions in the Employment Relations Act. Our submission outlines the fact that we believe that this is not an appropriate way to deal with employment issues. And certainly the processes are more difficult. They exclude a number of provisions, including discrimination against joining unions, and also the primary remedy of reinstatement is not one that is available to the Human Rights Commission. So I do understand that they are able to provide advice to the Select Committee, and given Dr. Matt made quite a significant point about this morning, I thought that would be worthy of investigation.
Perhaps if the CQ would like to put that in writing to the committee,
sure.
The committee will then consider your request and make a decision.
Thank you.
I'll open it up for questions. Wayne's got two questions. I'm going to have to be fairly tight to get you. I'm not even, so we're going to have to go across.
You say this is a fundamental attack on rights. Why is it that every other OECD country actually has probation periods, and if you look at the specific clauses of countries that are actually most closely related to us, that is Britain and Australia, they specifically provide that there will be no personal grievance procedures in that really state of employment contract. And the whole point of that, of course, is to essentially incentivise getting people into employment. So why are we right and they're wrong, and they have hard work to be broken?
Well, they don't. I'm not here as an apologist for other OECD countries. What we're talking about is the situation here. First of all, we have a probationary provision. It's section 67 of the Act, and that actually provides a fair process for employers and employees to agree on the terms of the probation, and then any challenge to that is limited to the terms of the probation. Although, if issues of discrimination or sexual harassment or whatever fundamental rights arise, then obviously they can arise. But if it's simply a matter of probation, then they can be addressed. Now, employers don't appear to even use that, so there's no evidence of it not being workable because it hasn't been used. Secondly, if you look at, we get lectured to by the OECD on quite a number of issues, and one would have to say that a number of our initiatives in New Zealand in terms of economic and social development wouldn't meet the approval of the ideologues at the OECD. In fact, when you look at our performance, though, it's much better. So the evidence that we would put to this committee is that we have a better unemployment record over the past 6 years than any other OECD country. And if that's what this bill is directed at, then the evidence is that the existing system is working. On productivity, well, I would challenge you, Mr. Matt, to find any evidence anywhere in the world to suggest that this sort of approach actually is the solution to improving productivity. Improving productivity successfully in the countries that have higher productivity is actually investing in skills and making sure that you have a match between jobs and skills. So if we actually focus on providing skills to these workers who are actually young, Māori, and to use Dr. Brash's terms, brown and old, then we might actually have a greater chance of ensuring that they get useful employment and in turn contribute to our economic development.
My second question relates to the unemployment rate for Māori youth. I mentioned earlier that for Māori youth, even in the current circumstances, for age 15 to 19, it's over a quarter, 26.3%. That's March 2006. And for 20 to 24-year-olds, it's 13.4%, which is much better. Those are big figures. They're certainly very large compared to the general population. And frankly, when you've got a quarter of the youth, Māori youth workforce unemployed, don't you actually have to do something different? Essentially make it easier for people to get jobs. Some of those people may have literacy issues, gang members. They will not necessarily present themselves in the best possible way to get that first job. Bear in mind that the first 75% who have got jobs probably do find them a bit easier, but the down into that quarter.
I'll ask Peter to comment on the data and Sharon to comment on the solutions.
We acknowledge that Māori youth unemployment is unacceptably high. We certainly thought it was extremely unacceptable in the 1990s when it was incredibly high. And at a time when Māori unemployment was 19%, the youth unemployment rate for Māori would have been even higher than it is today. The fact that it's fallen from 19% to below 9% in the space of the last 6 years in terms of Māori unemployment is very significant. As we said, that's happened without this bill. And we support an investment approach. It's also the case that... It's also the case that Māori is, of course, proportionately a much younger population. So when you put the youth unemployment statistics alongside Māori unemployment, you're combining two features. You're combining the fact that they're Māori and the fact that they're also a younger cohort in terms of unemployment. So certainly we are saying that the successful approach in terms of reducing Māori unemployment, particularly the growth in employment of Māori in the last period, has been higher than anything we've seen for many decades. So we support the current approach of investment. In terms of the statistics, we don't argue with the fact that it is high.
Sure.
Firstly, what I wanted to say in response to your question, Mr. Mapp, is that we know that the largest increase in the number of Māori aged between 15 and 24 years of age will occur before 2011. So the next 6 years are crucial in developing skills and for this group. We also know that a significant proportion of Māori between 16 to 65 have levels of literacy below the considered minimum for coping with the demands of everyday life and work in a complex and advanced society. And the question raised at the very beginning of the session to you was, how does giving short-term 90-day periods of employment opportunities to those people that you're saying are vulnerable, will that result in increased productivity if those people are young and illiterate and Māori? We're saying we don't see that it will. We believe that the solution is around investing in the skills of our young people, giving them an opportunity to develop skills to increase their literacy, and we've only got 6 years to get this moving. A rotational workforce is not going to make that happen.
It's not aimed at a rotational workforce. We're going to have to move on sooner, right?
Thank you. I want to put a scenario to you and just check that this is what you're in fact saying. That in that first 90-day, if this bill went through, in that 90-day period, there's a critical decision, isn't there, in many workplaces that people make about joining a union or not. And in fact, there's a 30-day period, I think, under the current Act, where they get to choose to whether they're going to be involved in a collective employment agreement or not. So the scenario I'm thinking about is someone decides that they're going to stay party to the collective employment agreement in that first 30 days, which is where they have to make that decision. They join the union. The employer decides, I don't want that person to join the union. They're out of here. They use this bill to do that. You're then saying also that it's double jeopardy because then they, if they don't immediately get another job, that they're in a stand-down period that they can't get waived with their with an unemployment benefit. Is that
and the prejudice of actually having a dismissal that they can't even explain because there may not have been any reason given.
Okay. And a quadruple jeopardy, in fact, because arguably, or the argument by Dr. Mapp is that they can go to the Human Rights Commission, except in that case they couldn't, because that's not a ground that would be covered by the Human Rights Commission.
You also raised sexual harassment in that same vein. You're saying that may not be covered by the Human Rights Commission?
Well, sexual harassment is covered by the Human Rights Commission provisions, but it's a different process than that outlined in the Employment Relations Act, and that's why we feel it is important to compare the two processes, because they are very different, both in terms of timeliness, in terms of outcomes, without a primary remedy of reinstatement. So even if you were discriminated, even if you could prove that you were sacked because you were a woman, say, you went to the Human Rights Commission because that avenue would still be open to you, according to Dr. Mapp, even if that was proved, reinstatement is not an option.
And the dangerous work one, because I hadn't thought about that one before, and that really bothers me. You're essentially saying that the right under the Health and Safety and Employment Act for people to refuse to do work that would cause them serious harm, that this bill would interfere with that right.
Yeah, of course, because you can be dismissed without reason.
Yeah.
And I mean, we have an instance in our submission of a US case where that occurred.
I share those concerns, and I think in fairness to Wayne Mapp, I think he recognises some concerns there, which I believe could be tidied up. But what does concern me is employers tell me privately, not publicly, that because they don't have a 90-day or probation period, or 67 is too difficult to implement or whatever, they employ people casually. Now, a few years ago, we saw on our television sets watersiders going into ports inside containers, for God's sake, shipping containers, so that they couldn't be seen by the public, and they were all engaged on a casual basis. Now, it seems to me there could be merit in this bill of saying the 90-day probationary period, if it's completed satisfactorily, if it's monitored all good, then there has to be a permanent job at the end of it. Have you got any comment on that? Because there are thousands of people that start to employ casually.
Well, I mean, that would be a good situation, that if everyone, every casual employee who completed 30 days of employment was able to have permanent employment at the end of it. But of course, the nature of casual employment is that it's often a daily contract. And in fact, the evidence would show over the last 10 years that in fact the opposite of what you would hope is likely to occur given past experience. Casual workers, as you know, and I know because I share your waterfront experience, are employed quite deliberately by employers on casual contracts to keep them vulnerable. The experience under the Employment Contracts Act was that employers started to employ people on fixed-term period, so that they had the ability to terminate their employment at the end of any fixed term period, whether that was a month, 2 months, or 3 months.
Sometimes one day.
And sometimes one day. And this would provide that opportunity for those employers. So the evidence is that this has happened, and the evidence is that it will happen again if this bill was passed.
I want to ask about any more submission, and I do think that some of your, like the health and safety one, certainly concerns me, and I know that Wayne and I have talked about it, and also the union one, like, you know, for those, and I'm sure that there is some way that we can find something that does, because there's no way we want to see people being terminated for those sorts of reasons. What I do want to talk to you about, though, is 8.1, and you talk about a few cases in the first 3 months of employment, page 11 of your submission. You talk about the exact number of cases involving employees of less than 3 months taken to the ERA is not known at the time of making the submission. You request the information. However, anecdotal reports suggest that there are a very small proportion of the overall number of cases, and I would back that up from my own experience within the employment and IR group. So isn't that exactly sort of our point, if you like, is that there are so few cases that are being taken through the performance, through the personal grievance process, so it's actually not going to, you know, all of a sudden all these people that are taking these cases and it's happening in their first 3 months, it's not, because there's not that many people. What it is about those people that are not getting the jobs, and that this bill is actually going to help them.
No, I don't agree with you. In fact, the evidence is contrary to that. The reason I would suggest that there are no personal grievances during the first 90 days is that the issue doesn't arise very often, because if an employer terminates the employment for a reason that can't be justified in law, they have to justify it in law. So that acts as a standard which the minority of bad employers have to think twice about, at least. And so it acts as a preventive. And actually, that's the whole point of these standards in employment law and other law, is that it actually does signal a standard and a process, and it acts as a prevention. The big issue, though, is that, you know, there's a probationary period there in Section 67, and we have this allegation that the probationary period in 67 is unworkable, and it's not been used.
Certainly.
Now, when we had a discussion with the Small Business Advisory Group and actually went into this in detail, they had to admit that. In fact, when they first made the recommendation, I don't think they knew about Section 67. And so, you know, this is actually a revelation to them that there is a provision which can work that may not have been known to employers, that with some more information and perhaps some standard clauses as guidance could be made to work perfectly satisfactorily without taking away the fundamental rights of up to 300,000 New Zealanders.
That wouldn't be the report that businesses would give you. I mean, just last year I was working with over 400 of them on employment relations and on the whole recruitment field. So I can tell you they were very much saying, we would like to take a risk on someone, but we can't, and the probation period within the Act just does not make allowances for that sort of relationship to be tested out between the two people in the first
place. Well, I can tell you that if we send out a petition to our constituency and said, we're going to induce a bill that gives you an absolute right to sack your boss without him having any redress, of course they would support it.
I wasn't saying that we did that. I was saying that this is just from pre-Parliament, actually.
I am an employer myself, as it turns out, on building sites, and it really saddens me that you guys are trying to restrict a bill that would allow me to employ, and I'm directed mainly to the young marriages. On building sites, for example, I'm very similar to other people, we have seniors and juniors, so we try and match a tradesman with a learner. Right? That's the first point. I can tell you on my side at the moment, there's on one side there's 13 guys, and they're all seniors. We will take a chance with a senior for the simple reason that they're tradesmen, they're qualified. We won't take a chance with the junior because the risk is too high. If this 3 month bill comes in, we will take those young people on. I'd like to mention that point. So I actually think you're restricting young marriages getting jobs. You're actually going the wrong way about it. Now, I'm not supposed to give you a lecture here, but the point is, I just asked you the question. Why don't you give young Marys a chance to get a job?
Why don't you use the existing probationary provision and give those young workers a chance?
You asked the question.
I mean, you're a good employer, clearly, and there are plenty of good employers.
I'll answer very quickly. I employed a guy.
Sorry, Bob.
The whole story.
We've asked the questions on the submitters' committee.
Sorry, I encourage you.
Is it fair that an employer like me employs a young person who arrives on the first day that's drunk? We can't get rid of him because of the system. So we gave him a week. He came back to work drunk again, drunk again. We've got to go through a whole process.
No.
Is it fair?
I don't think it's right either in law, because I only need to open my employment law book and it says that you can be sacked on the spot for being drunk at work. There are plenty of
Douglas Boone.
We'll discuss it over a whiskey.